Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
We've got planes on the show today. Bankruptcy troubles for American Airlines. Our man in China takes a long ride on a slow train. No automobiles, though. We had those yesterday. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace podcast for Wednesday, the 19th of September. Good as always to have you here. And we begin in bankruptcy court, the Chapter 11 filing of AMR, proud parent company of American Airlines. It's sitting of some turbulence, if you will, as it works its way toward a reorganization and a possible merger with U.S. Airways. The pilots union is accusing AMR of using bankruptcy to cut costs more than necessary. The company is sending layoff warning notices to more than 11,000 employees. And passengers, meanwhile, you remember them? Well, they're caught in a morass of late and canceled flights, as our senior business correspondent Bob Moon explains.
At first, a pilots union spokesman insisted there is absolutely no slowdown, sick out, or any other union-organized job action against American. Tom Hoban of the Allied Pilots Association suggested it's just spontaneous.
You've got a very angry group of frontline employees that are being put through the wringer in this bankruptcy process.
So I pressed the question, why have so many flights been canceled in recent days? Well, up to 6 in 10 arrived late, and he all but confirmed reports that flights are being grounded for even minor repairs that wouldn't normally cause delays.
We're under a great deal of FAA scrutiny in this bankruptcy right now. I can't speak for any of the ground workers, but we've got pilots that are going to take a very, very cautious operational approach. And if there's a maintenance item in question, they're going to write it up.
It's gotten so bad that a travel columnist for the Wall Street Journal recommends travelers avoid American this fall. Veteran airline consultant Mike Boyd thinks that's going too far.
They imply that customers are about to get shafted by American Airlines if they make a booking. That's not true. They have some issues they're working through. All airlines have had this. But to imply to the public this is going to continue for months is totally inaccurate.
But Richard Abulafia, an analyst for the Teal Group, isn't so sure.
They still have some time to make this right, but if this persists, if they can't get the unions on the same page as management, then yeah, there are going to be good reasons to be wary.
At airfarewatchdog.com, travel expert George Hobica says a union pushback was bound to happen.
The unions have done a lot of givebacks, and now that the airlines are making money finally, they want their share.
Hobica thinks Americans' troubles could foreshadow tough labor bargaining ahead for other airlines. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Have you noticed that the smarter our phones get, the dumber we get? Phone numbers? Come on, you probably only know a couple by heart. The rest are? Where are they? That's right, they're in your phone. Email addresses, same thing. And directions? Come on, who needs to know how to get from point A to point B when Google Maps can show you the way? Actually, wait, because that last part could start causing some problems for Apple. It rolled out its new OS 6 operating system today, and notably missing was Google Maps. Apple's got its own map app instead. But as Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports, something may get lost in translation.
I use Google Maps on my iPhone all the time. Finding the best subway route to an interview, seeing how long it will take to walk somewhere, obsessively checking traffic on the way to the airport. The map app has to work.
It just seemed as though it got confused a little bit at times.
Rich Jaroslawski is a tech columnist for Bloomberg News. He recently tested the iPhone 5 and found Apple's map app to be a little directionally challenged.
I was driving south on the Embarcadero, which is the main road that runs right along San Francisco Bay, and the iPhone thought I was going northbound.
Apple Maps also doesn't offer any subway or bus information at all. Renee Ritchie is the editor of iMore, an Apple News site. He says for people who depend on those things,
it could be almost deal-breakingly bad.
So why would Apple risk angering consumers? Why not just stick with Google Maps? Money.
Google was previously getting access to every iPhone user's location data, so now they control their own location destiny.
Which means Apple can eventually sell ads to consumers based on where they are and where they're headed. In the meantime, customers might be irritated, but they'll wait it out, predicts Van Baker, an analyst with Gartner, Inc.
As long as they get it fixed within a reasonable amount of time, we'll give them a little leeway.
And Apple may not need much leeway, says Bloomberg News' Rich Jaroslawski.
My guess is Apple will throw resources at it And the one thing we know about Apple is they have a lot of resources.
Now, if they can just figure out which way is north. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
So I'll tell you, I've got the new Apple OS downloading while I'm in the studio here. So if I don't show up tomorrow, you guys will know what happened. On Wall Street today, the major indices lacked a sense of direction themselves. We'll have the choppy, choppy details when we do the numbers. We're not the only election game in town this fall, you know. They're getting a new set of faces at the top over in China, too. The big difference, of course, is that nobody gets a vote over there. The Chinese people can, though, talk about the State of the Union, opinions that are often aired in the course of a long train ride, still the most common form of transportation in China. So this week, our Shanghai correspondent Rob Schmitz is going to take two train rides, one slow-moving, crowded, and uncomfortable in the countryside, the other a plush Wi-Fi accessible bullet train on the busy East Coast. Two trains, two stories about what the Chinese think of their country's economic future. Here's Rob from the slow train.
Train 5640 out of the southwestern Chinese city of Guiyang has no air conditioning. That's what the fans fastened to the ceiling are for, but none of them works. So on this stifling day, all the windows are open. A rush of wind signals the entrance to a mountain tunnel. The world goes black and the echo of the engine makes it impossible to hear anyone. There's a tunnel like this every few minutes. If you have something to say on this train, you say it fast. Farmer Tian Jinghe tells me he's ridden this train every month for 3 years. He sees a doctor in the big city for a thyroid problem. He has a tumor on his neck the size of a baseball and can barely afford the treatment. The 56-year-old's already worn down by his grandkids. They were left behind by his two sons, who moved hundreds of miles to the coast several years ago in search of work.
People in this part of China only give birth to babies. They don't take care of them. They leave that to grandparents.
This part of China is Guizhou, China's poorest province. Train 5640 is one of Guizhou's slowest trains. It makes stops in places like High Plains Village, Fiber River, and Six Chickens. Tian lives in a village named Tombstone. A big city like Beijing seems a world away, Tian tells me. I ask him what the new leadership in Beijing should do for a village like Tombstone, apart from maybe changing its name.
The government in Beijing usually makes good policies, but they become twisted by the time they get to the local government to carry out.
Tian says the central government put money aside to modernize agriculture in his region. Tombstone's local officials used the money to remove entire mountains, flattening the land, making way for a new irrigation system. In the end, Tian says, the irrigation system didn't work, and Tombstone is left with piles of rubble where hills of terraced rice paddies once stood. Acres of farmland were destroyed. He says it was a waste of hundreds of millions of dollars.
They didn't even hire local people to work on this worthless project. They bus them in from a neighboring province. I think China's biggest challenge is the abuse of power by local officials. Money corrupts people.
That's not how Long Chengbing and Li Ning see it. The two young men grew up together here, but like most young people from Guizhou, went out to find work in factory towns along China's coast. Long says he spent years at a candy factory.
We made long, thin candy. They looked like pencils, but curved at the ends. They were red and white, sometimes green and white. They didn't taste very good. We exported them to America.
I teach Long an English word, candy cane. Long says whatever they were, making them taught him skills he never would have learned had he stayed on his parents' farm.
And I wouldn't have learned those skills had it not been for the government developing China. I learned how to manage people at that factory, and now that I've returned home, I can start a business here.
Long's advice for China's new leadership? Don't listen to the critics. Keep investing, keep building, and keep people employed. Guizhou, he says, is still poor, but he can feel that it's turning the corner. A woman sits across the aisle from me. She listens quietly to my conversations with a grin, her arms crossed. She's in her 30s, older than the idealistic young factory workers, younger than the cynical old farmer. I ask her what she thinks.
China's too big to manage. You focus on developing one region, and another region feels left out. That's what's happened in Guizhou, but it's difficult for China's leaders.
I ask her what will be the biggest challenge for China's new leadership.
Control. Here in Guizhou, local officials often mess things up. They use central government money to try and make the countryside look like the city. It's all about image. In my town, there are sidewalks in places where it doesn't make any sense just because local officials think it looks good. I'm sure leaders at the top would shake their heads at such a waste of money.
I asked the woman her name. Just say that I'm a lady from Guizhou, she tells me. Okay, lady from Guizhou, I say. What do you do for a living? Her grin turns to a smile as a rush of wind begins to pick up through the car. Sensing another tunnel of noise and darkness approaching, she quickly leans forward and whispers, I'm a government official. On the hard seat class slow train in Guizhou, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
We've got pictures of Rob's train ride and a map of where he's gone on our website. It's marketplace.org. Tomorrow, that faster, plusher bullet train from Shanghai to Beijing and more stories about what the Chinese think of their economic future. Financial markets are, as you know if you've been paying attention the past 4 years, a scary place. Not only is it hard to sort out what's going on between the news and the stock charts and the politics of economies here and overseas, but there's real money on the line, retirements and college funds and nest eggs. So for guidance, some traders have started to look up, all the way up, as our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore explains.
New York is full of people who make big decisions about billions of dollars. To the person on the street, like Nancy Cashel, these decisions look rational.
I would presume that it's part of a bigger plan, part of a structured idea of how to make money.
But some on Wall Street look beyond stock charts to astrological charts. They follow financial astrology. It's like the horoscope that you check every day, but it helps traders see the destiny of stock prices and the economy.
They want to have that edge. They want to know what the future is.
Karen Starich charges $237 annually for her newsletter, which goes out to around 300 traders. These days, she sees dark times in the Federal Reserve's chart.
They now have Saturn square Neptune, which is really bankruptcies.
Neptune represents money, but when Saturn shows up in a chart, it indicates restriction. So for the Fed, that means
the fiscal cliff is here. And there's no place to go but to print more money or unravel these financial institutions.
Naturally, not everyone's a believer. One trader I talked to compared financial astrology to believing in unicorns. Even those who use financial astrology aren't ready to publicize it. Art Crawford was a Merrill Lynch stock analyst before he became a financial astrologer. A money manager sheepishly contacted him recently about subscribing to his newsletter.
He said, well, my top client who runs $18 billion wants it, and he wants it in a brown paper wrapper.
A few months ago, Crawford warned his 2,000 subscribers to avoid new ventures while Mercury looks like it's moving backwards in the sky. That's a time of communication snafus. One brokerage firm paid the price, he says.
Knight Capital did not take our advice to downplay new purchases or trying new things during the apparent retrograde motion of Mercury.
Knight Capital suffered a software glitch that nearly put the firm out of business. Skeptics would chalk that up to coincidence. Both Arch Crawford and Karen Starich say the astrological charts show only possible outcomes. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
Straight ahead,
It doesn't seem really that the government is morally against gambling. It seems more like the government is morally against gambling that doesn't lead to direct revenues for the government.
Ante up, everybody, the Freakonomics of five-card stud. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials added 13 points today, a tenth of 1%, closed at 13,577, the blue chips did. The NASDAQ ticked up 4 points, also a tenth of 1%, ended at 3182. The S&P 500 inched up a point. It was, wait for it, yeah, a tenth of 1%, finished at 1461. The folks with the green eye shades told us today August was a pretty good month for previously owned homes and construction of new ones. Not surprisingly, that was good news for home builders. Shares of Pulte Group and D.R. Horton hammered home gains of more than 4% apiece. KB Home and Toll Brothers each rose about 3.5%. Falling oil prices opened the drain on energy stocks. ExxonMobil leaked 1.2%. ConocoPhillips was off almost 1%. Chevron dribbled lower 0.3%. Today, European markets closed higher. The French CAC 40, and German DAX each added more than 0.5%. The British FTSE picked up more than 0.3%. Today, bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.77%. You're listening to MarketPlace.
Show MarketPlace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. We'll get earnings from a company that's probably in your kitchen cabinet, ConAgra. They're the folks that make Chef Boyardee, Orville Redenbacher popcorn, and Snack Pack pudding. President Obama will be in Florida for a series of campaign events. And happy birthday to Italian femme fatale and screen legend Sophia Loren. She's 77. I'm Bridget Bodner.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The teacher strike in Chicago that ended yesterday lasted 7 school days. Felt like forever, probably, for the parents who had to figure out what to do with their kids while schools were closed. We talked to Sheila Coleman the first day the teachers were out. She is a single mom to a 12-year-old daughter. And we've gotten her back on the line today to see how she made it through the past week and a half or so. Ms. Coleman, it's good to talk to you again.
You too.
First of all, how'd you feel when you heard the news last night?
I was excited. And the kids were excited. I was elated.
Yeah, I don't think the kids were excited. I bet you were probably really excited.
Yes. Yes, I was. It then seems like it was just going to be a whole 2 weeks. I didn't think they were going to be back in school, but I was very excited that they were.
So what have you done the past 7 or 8 days? I mean, we spoke to you on day one or two. Were you able to take time off to be with your daughter at this time?
I didn't. I really couldn't take off to be with her.
Couldn't bring her to work, I guess, right?
No. But I read in a paper that some people did bring kids to work.
What would you have done if things had not gotten settled? Because, you know, it's not like you can have people stay with your 12-year-old daughter forever.
I'd have to find out how many vacation days I had because I would have to stay home with her some days. And they didn't say anything about today. I was going to teach her at home.
How much do you think you would have lost in pay, though, to take time to teach your daughter? Because that's the equation, right?
Well, $300 to $400, I know that.
Which is not a small amount of money.
No, it's not. That could pay 3 or 4 bills. That could pay 3 or 4 bills for me if I don't have any time.
Yeah. After all is said and done now, with 7 days of school missed and you having to make all kinds of arrangements for your daughter, what are your feelings? How do you feel about this whole thing?
I don't even feel it should have been a strike. I think the kids should have been in school. They should have just gave the teachers what they wanted.
So you were with the teachers at the beginning and you're with the teachers now, huh?
Yeah.
How's the mood? I mean, what are people saying in the city?
Oh, yes. A lot of people just saying, I'm so glad school has started back. I'm glad this is all over with.
Sheila Coleman, the mother of a 12-year-old girl who's been missing school the past 7 days or so. Well, Ms. Coleman, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, if you promise to keep it just between us, I've got an investment tip for you about a company that is said to be putting itself up for sale. It dabbles in pro sports teams and leagues and stadiums, in fact. It's got a nice little sideline doing concert promotions and real estate. So if you've got a couple of bills, as in billions, in your pocket, AEG can be yours. Here's a little due diligence from Marketplace's Scott Tong, in case you're unfamiliar.
Okay, AEG.
No, it's not that bailed-out insurance company. It's not a utility in the Midwest. It owns the Staples Center Arena in Los Angeles and the LA Kings of hockey, the Galaxy in soccer, and arenas and teams in London, Istanbul, Berlin, Hamburg. Oh, and it's also the world's number two concert promoter.
They have been a great stagehand to all of these teams.
Andy Dolich is former president of the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies. He spoke by cell phone.
People are going to see the greatest athletes in the world, greatest performers do their thing. They don't know who the stagehands are, but without that background, without the microphones and all that, you don't really have the event.
Dolich says AEG has been able to see around the corner and turn music and sports sites into entertainment districts. And it's loaded up the arenas with tech gizmos, says Jim Andrews of the sponsorship consultancy IEG.
Like being able to order food directly from your seat, using devices to do that. You know, all of those things have really changed the experience.
So why is AEG on the block? Good luck with that one. It's privately held by the very private billionaire Phil Anschutz, number 44 on the Forbes Rich List. Rick Burton teaches sports management at Syracuse.
He's not like a Jerry Jones or a George Steinbrenner. Phil Anschutz was as big as any of the biggest names that the average fan would know.
Don't expect Anschutz to talk about the sale. His last interview was in the 70s. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Time now for a little Freakonomics Radio. It's that moment every couple of weeks where we talk to, this time, Stephen Levitt. He is the co-author, the other co-author of the books and the blog of the same name. It is, of course, the hidden side of everything. Dubner, I guess, is out of town. Levitt, how are you?
I'm doing great.
So listen, I have a little piece of paper in front of me. It says we're going to talk about poker today, and I am shocked to find out there's gambling going on at Freakonomics World Headquarters.
Oh, well, poker's one of my all-time favorite things.
Seriously?
All gambling. Yeah, well, my father introduced me to it early on. When I was no more than 5 or 6, he would go out and play poker with his friends.
Yeah.
And if he won, he would leave a $5 bill in the keyhole of my door. And
no
if he
way.
Lost, he wouldn't leave anything. And so I very early on developed positive associations with gambling, that you only won and you never lost.
But here's the thing, and I'm a little shocked to discover that you are a poker player, because really it's like a game of luck, right? I mean, you deal some cards and boom, you're done.
Yeah, if poker were a game of luck, I definitely would not be a fan. You wouldn't catch me anywhere near a craps table or a roulette table. But poker is so obviously a game of skill.
That's like a declarative statement. Prove it, right? I mean, how do you know?
You kind of know if you've ever played poker that some guys are good at it and some guys are bad at it.
I have to say here, I'm a horrible poker player. I'm just a really bad gambler. But
really? Well, that's good to know, because I think you and I are going to have to sit down at the table the next time we're together. Then. But beyond just experiencing poker, we've actually written a couple papers. One was a simple paper that just looked at outcomes in the World Series of Poker. So every summer, the best poker players in the world convene. And the great thing about poker tournaments is if you pay your entry fee, you get to play. It's not, you don't have to qualify. You don't have to be any good. And a lot of bad players play along with the good players. And so, not surprisingly, really, to someone who plays poker, that the good players did very well and earned positive returns. And the bad players, the guys like me who show up and think it would be fun to play with the good players, end up losing a lot of money.
Now, all right, so if that was the simple paper you just described, what's the complicated paper in layman's terms?
So this is a special data set with 12 million hands of online poker. And what makes it special is that we actually get to see the whole cards, the hidden cards that the players have, because it was given to us by the online poker site. And so we can analyze the skill of the play in a way that others never have been able to. And indeed, we show on every single test that we can think of doing that skill really predominates over luck when it comes to no limit hold'em poker.
So what are we supposed to take away from this? That it's okay to do this if you know what you're doing, but it's not if you're not?
Well, it's a crazy politicized issue now, which is hard to understand, which that Congress has made it more or less illegal to play games of luck over the internet for real money. And so there's been a lot of litigation going on, and the biggest poker sites got shut down in what was called Black Friday.
For those of you in the game.
And exactly. And so there's an interesting decision handed down in a recent case by a legendary judge named Jack Weinstein, who has really turned over a lot of the existing legal thinking by judging that poker is a game of skill and looking at it in much the way an economist would look at it. And so we've been thrust into this new world where no one really knows what's going to happen next with online poker.
Well, what should happen next? I mean, should it just be legalized? Because there are people who have problems with this stuff, right? I mean, there are gambling addicts and all that.
Well, what's funny is that government has taken a hard line against online gambling, and yet at the same time, there are state-run lotteries and there are state-approved casinos. So it doesn't seem really that the government is morally against gambling. It seems more like the government is morally against gambling that doesn't lead to direct revenues for the government. So it seems to me if the government wants to be in the business of controlling and monopolizing gambling, then the government should do a better job of putting together some good internet poker sites so that the people who want to play poker are able to play.
You know what I think?
What do you think?
I think you actually just did this research so you can play more poker. That's what I think. Stephen Levitt, Freakonomics.com is the website. He's back. Probably not him, actually. Dubner's probably back in a couple of weeks. Stephen, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kai. It's been great.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, the birthday of what I think you can fairly call the scourge of electronic communications in the modern age. The 19th of September, 1982, in the computer science department at Carnegie Mellon University, a guy named Scott Fallman first typed a colon, a dash, and a right parentheses and said, "Hey, look at what this looks like sideways." The emoticon turns 30 years old today. Bet you didn't know that. All right, today the Dow added 13 points. That's about a tenth of 1%, 13,577 at the bell. The NASDAQ ticked up 4 points, also a tenth percent, 3182. The S&P 500 inched up a point. Yes, also a tenth of 1%, 1461. Ravi Karman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Bradford Craig, Bill Lynch, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, and Brendan Willard engineered the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you back here tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.